Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like months-long offers of low commission. At BetDaq, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDaq is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDaq, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly.
Hello and welcome back to the Rover Report Extra Podcast. It's a day after we've just beaten Newcastle's Benz 4-0. I was there, it was a bit of a weird one. I think there was a no-win situation there. It shouldn't really have happened, if I'm honest with you. But if you're going to play a game like that, I suppose you've got to go in, you've got to win 4-0. But we managed to rest pretty much everyone, I think. With Saturday in mind, what an absolutely huge, huge, huge game on Saturday, probably our biggest of the season, and our opponents probably as well. I've got on Ian from We Are Luton Town. How are you doing, Ian? Are you all?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you doing?
A positive mood after your news today. What's happening?
Well, yeah, it's positive for you guys, isn't it?
Yes.
Very, obviously, really, season derailing news for us, really. Probably our best manager we've had in a lot of years, certainly in my lifetime anyway. And, you know, Nathan Jones got us playing some very, very good football. He's got a philosophy going through the club. And it was a bit of a shock, if I'm honest, because, you know, throughout this season, he's had a few inquiries about other teams and he's not gone. And then Stoke came out the woodwork and all of a sudden he's gone. So there you go.
The speed of it was actually quite frightening. I thought like it might be maybe long and protracted. He might think about it and it might go into next week and obviously he'll be in charge on Saturday and things like that. But it pretty much, he was linked and then he just went. It seems, it's not like Stoke. I mean, no offence to Stoke, but it's not a huge attraction.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because they've got the manager merry-go-round at the minute. With all the managers they've had recently, they seem to be sliding down the table. You wouldn't think it's an opportunity that he would go for, but you know, money does talk, and I'd imagine he was offered a very good contract there, and the release clause in his contract with Luton was about £1 million, which is, you know, in the face of things, in the face of promotion, which it's ultimately might cost us, is very, very little. But he'd been put on a big contract, and at the end of the day, he's got a, you know, wife coming up. He's got to look after himself. It's number one, isn't it? So what can you do?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, even from the outside looking in, as good news as it is, I was quite surprised by it, if I'm honest with you as well. I think for me, Luton seemed to be a club on the up. Stoke seemed to be a rebuilding job. Is that the place where you want to go when you're a new up-and-coming manager? I mean, I could be proved wrong. We both could be proven wrong, but I didn't quite understand it. But it's great news for us because, as you say, it could completely derail your season. So, you know, my question to you would be, what do you have when you've got someone like Nathan Jones there? What has he brought to the club? And then what is it that you're effectively losing based on him going to Stoke today?
Well, he came in at a time where we were mid-table in League Two, really struggling under John Still. We were playing all right football, but nothing really attractive. You know, many years have gone by now that Luton have played attractive football, but we just started to get back into it. He was playing a 4-4-2 diamond formation, which isn't really seen in any of the leagues. And, you know, most teams are coming to us and having to match us up because they couldn't cope with it. And it's a philosophy he's built into the club. And the worry is now he's built that philosophy on this season and we're in second place. who's going to come in and going to be able to, you know, manage that philosophy? Are we going to be able to continue, or is it going to be a real rebuilding job for us? Because I'm looking at the list and I'm going to be honest, there's not many names out there that are appealing at the minute.
Who's the favourite?
Well, the favourite, Steve Robinson from Motherwell, an ex-player of ours, but I don't really think that's got any legs. Second is Joaquin Gomez, who's our first team coach and has been for about 2.5 years. Providing that Jones doesn't take him with him to Stoke, for me, that would be the best option. He's, you know, he was at Brighton with Nathan Jones. He knows him very well, so he might take him, might not. But if we can get Joaquin Gomez, I think if he signs up, I think that'll be the best option for this season, at least anyway. He knows the philosophy inside out. He knows the team. The team knows him. I think looking at the list, that's probably our best option.
I suppose based on what you just mentioned there as well, it seems like the big worry is losing the continuity or continuing the continuity of the style of football, the ethos, and probably the atmosphere around the club as well. I mean, what you mentioned the diamond formation, and I noticed that you have, like, I think it's Lee that sits in like your number 10 position. You've got Andrew Shinney on the left, and you've got, is it McCormick kind of sits in front of the defence as well, but you've just brought in George Thorne as well. So your midfield is quite strong. I mean, what is it about the style of football that Nathan Jones brought to that, and how important was the midfielder to that ethos he had?
Yeah, it was massive. It's a big part of where we are now, a massive part. I mean, some credit has got to go the way he G's the players up and he got the best out of them, but a lot of it was just the style of play. It was high pressure, bringing our fullbacks into play. We've got Jack Stacey and we've got James Justin. They're pivotal to the way we played. Glenn Ray has recently gone out injured. Again, has probably been our best player this year, who sits where Cormac sits now. It's just the pivotal way we play in that diamond formation. I honestly can't see anybody else coming in and being able to replicate that now, and I can't see that continuity going forward. But, you know, I might be proved wrong. If Gomez stays and takes the first manager's job, then it might prove a winner, if we don't know.
I think Gav was chatting to you before via sort of message on Twitter, and we mentioned Paul Hurst. He played good football. He's got he did well at Shrewsbury, did very well, in fact, but when at Ipswich didn't work out, but they're a bit of a car crash club at the minute. Would you look at Paul Hurst?
I'm not sold on Paul Hurst. I've seen him a few times when we've come up against him in League Two. I wasn't over enamoured with his style of football. Not really. I mean, the only one really, the ones out of that list I would look at is probably Warburton, Gomez. Also an outsider chance, and it's a very, very slim chance. At 20-1, we've got Radian Tish, who used to play for us years ago. He's been at the club recently. Bit of a long shot, but he might fancy a little bit of a punt.
So there's almost like nobody that's nailed on. I suppose that's got to do that's probably got to do with the timing of it, though. I mean, again, like we were just saying before, it was so fast. And obviously, I can hear the disappointment in your voice, which, you know, I expected, of course. I mean, if we lost Jack Ross tomorrow, I think we'd be the same. But you've got even longer longevity with Nathan Jones. You've got a promotion and what was looking like a second promotion, basically the complete opposite to what we've had recently, or, you know, there or thereabouts, and you still might be. But you mentioned about derailing your season. What is the big worry regarding Luton's fan base just now? Obviously, losing a manager, you feel they might lose the identity and the form, but do you think the group of players could buckle under the pressure of him not being there anymore?
I think, providing we keep the majority of our players, that's the first point. I think pressure-wise, they've dealt with the pressure quite well this season. That's one thing that I've noticed, which we don't normally have as a Luton team. When we get into pressure situations, we do normally buckle, and we have done in past seasons, but under Jones, they don't seem to do that. I think there's enough characters in the squad to be able to get past that. There's quite a few leaders. You know, a few of our players have been captain this season: Pearson, McCormack, Sonny Bradley. So there's a lot of leaders in there. I think they'll pull them up, but I think the main thing is that the decision to be the next manager is the main decision. If we get that wrong, I think, you know, that could derail our season. If we get it right, we could keep going. So,
I suppose it's a difficult question for me to ask, and an even more difficult one for you to answer. Is this going to derail your season? I guess the decision on who comes in next is pretty much what's going to decide that. You're right in saying. One thing that is been quite interesting, I suppose, because last time I did the extra podcast when we played you at the start of the season, the preview podcast was with Carlos Edwards, obviously, who we both know very, very well. He played for Luton when you were in the championship, and we went up and you went down. And then there's been a big patch of time, almost a decade, between things that have happened. And I suppose Luton are one of those teams that, since I was young, have pretty much always been there or thereabouts for summer. There's been a few seasons when, obviously, we're in the Premiership, but Division One, you were always there or thereabouts with Luton. But there was a big period of time where you sort of just fell down the leagues a bit. And I think probably because Portsmouth were doing the same thing, and Portsmouth is such a huge club, I suppose Luton's downward trajectory kind of got ignored a little bit in comparison to, say, Portsmouth. But you're back and doing really, really well. But talk me through a little bit what has happened since sort of we last played Luton at the Stadium Light in the longest but shortest summary you can, if you know what I mean.
I've been to all the Luton Sunderland games in my lifetime, I think, even going back to Roker Park, and I've got some very fond memories, especially at Roker Park anyway. From the last game we played you, I think, apart from in the league this year, was in the Carling Cup. I think we beat you 3-0, I think, in the Carling Cup, if my memory serves me right.
That's correct, Roy. It was the season after we beat you 5-0.
That was it.
Beat us 3-0 at home.
Yeah, that was it. And obviously, we were doing pretty well in the Championship. It got to a point where our chairman at the time, there was investigations going on. Mike Newell let the cat out of the bag with a few issues that were going on in the club. We sold lots of our players, Carlos Edwards to you being one of them. We got relegated to League One, and then we got a 10-point deduction in League One. Went down that season, we deserved to, really. And then in the following season, we got a 30-point deduction, and that pretty much relegated us straight away. Stuck in the conference for 5 years, hard times down there. But from 2009, when we got our current consortium in now, Luton Town 2020, who run us, which is a fan-based consortium, really, that's got investors behind them, they've really, really put a good structure in place for Luton, and we have risen up the leagues. They were very shrewd in their appointment of Nathan Jones, who, again, had no real experience but had a good pedigree. And we've done really, really well. We've got back up there more than a lot of Luton fans probably expected this quickly, especially under Nathan Jones. But we've got a rich history. You know, like you say, we're really a Championship club, and we have been for the majority of our lifetime. We've been in the top division for a while as well, but really predominantly in the Championship. And that's probably where we'll get to. But it all depends on... It's a big month for us this month. We've got the planning permission going through for our new stadium. We've got a lot of big games coming up, you being the first of them. And we've got Portsmouth at the end of the month as well. The idea was that them games to go well and our planning permission to go through. And it would have been a very good month, but it's not started so well. So,
no, I started in the worst possible way, in a sense, losing such an obviously talented and highly rated manager. With Luton, obviously, as you said, it was a team that kind of had that downward trajectory and just sort of fell down the leagues a bit, probably even worse than we did. Just a beat going from like the Championship, as you said, down to the conference. You mentioned about a consortium and things like that. Now, obviously, we've just been taken over this summer and it's made all the world a difference. I could go on about that forever. I mean, the fact that, you know, us as a fan side get to interview Stuart now and again about his plans and his openness on Twitter and stuff like that is brilliant. And I've also had the Accrington Stanley chairman, Andy Holt, on this extra pod as well. And he spoke fantastically well and exactly like a fan, because that's what he is. So what did the consortium bring to Luton? Do you feel like you're very much fan-owned and you've got transparency?
Very much so. Gary Sweet, who is our CEO, he first needed to stabilise the club financially, and that's pretty much what happened in the conference. Even though we were still getting 8,000, 9,000 a game, which was obviously big in the conference, we had the money to spend, but he first of all stabilised the club, put together planning permission for a new stadium, which has been long overdue, and he's done everything the right way. You know, I'm sure you've seen some of the articles about not taking money from betting companies, stuff like that. He's got a good ethos about him. all the directors have as well. They've really, really done a good job at stabilizing us and taking us to the next level. I think their main concern was, let's not try and do it too quickly. Let's make sure we've got everything in place first. Make sure we're not going to make the same mistakes we made before, and really make sure that loot aren't going to be an issue in the future in terms of stability and going into administration again. Because we had in the 2000s, we had two periods of administration, and really, really hurts. So I think that was the main focus. But the transparency is really, really good. When he puts out statements, they're transparent, but unlike Donald, they're not on Twitter or anything like that, which I actually quite like about your chairman. He's open and honest. If you guys ask him a question, he generally answers it pretty well.
Yeah, I think transparency is massive in football. It's a community thing. It always will be. Yes, it's got a lot of money in the game just now. I think we all know that. But at the same time, I think transparency is massive because it's community-based. And if you feel you're part of something, then that's why we're all going, really. As much as there's loads of money involved in it, we don't really look at it. A lot of the time, you see fans kicking off about how much money has been spent on a certain player. And in my opinion, always as well, it's not my money as long as it's not affecting the club and everyone's in together. Do you know what I mean? I'm quite happy. But I think there's a lot to be said for fan base. There's a lot of people I've spoken to, sort of Portsmouth, yourself, where they've had a fan base consortium and it really does seem to make a difference. And whereas Stuart's not quite fan based and he's very much, I think, a businessman, especially Charlie as well. But it is a lot to be said about bringing it back to the fans, which is what they've done. And they've done really, really well. And it doesn't really surprise me that the three clubs at the top of the league at the moment, which is obviously, well, the top four, actually, if you're including Charlton in that as well, Charlton, Portsmouth, Luton and Sunderland, they've all had a recent-ish change in ownership. We're all kind of had a bit of a turn in fortunes and we're all heading towards where we want to be going as well. But one thing that surprised me was Luton, because I knew you were there or thereabouts going to be one of the favourites, even though you've just been promoted. But I was surprised to see how well these have done, and it seems a lot of it is based on your home form. Did it surprise you as well?
Yeah, it did. Can't skirt around it. It did surprise me a bit. I thought this season we'd be going for a little bit of consolidation and then go from there. But I think that the pure drive from Nathan Jones has not allowed that to happen. He's coming. He wants to do well. You know, if our owners had turned around and said to him, look, we need to consolidate this year and make sure we're solid for next year, he would have just ignored that and gone straight for it anyway. Pure passion and drive from him, and you can't kind of stop that. But it has surprised me, yeah. I thought we'd be, you know, just outside the playoffs. But the style of football we're playing and the football we've been playing has just been a different class, absolutely different class, even better than when we were in the Championship, I believe.
With the performances and stuff like that, and you being obviously second off top, we're just behind you with those games in hand, I guess, which we have to win. But when you look at Luton and where they are, when we played you at the beginning of the season, our 1-1 draw is looking really, really good because your home form's been impeccable. What's the difference between you at home and you away? Does the style of football change?
I think it's the tactics. I think at home, it's gung-ho. You know, he's pushing solidly for 80 minutes and making sure we get a result, whereas away, he was thinking more tactically, you know, looking at each club on its merits and thinking, right, okay, what's the best thing to do? We stormed some teams away, and our away record's actually not as bad as it was at the start of the season, but I think it's just a little bit more cautious away from home and making sure we don't leak any goals in the first half. We did that against Peterborough, I believe, and we let three goals in the first like 10 minutes. So I think it was just tactics really more than anything, and just making sure.
Do you think the tactics will stay pretty similar? Because I'm imagining whether Nathan Jones takes members of the staff with him or whether he doesn't, the staff's going to be there in for the game on Saturday. I'm assuming he's not going to damage you that much. He's going to let some of the staff stay, so you've got someone to look after them.
Hopefully not. I mean, it depends who's in charge for Saturday. There's been no statement on that yet. If Gomez is in charge, he's the first team manager. He's got to take a lot of credit for our success as well. He's done a really good job since he's come in. I've seen some of his bits at the training ground, and he's really, really good. If he's managing us on Saturday, I think he'll get them G'd up and they'll have a bit about him. But it's hard. You can't just take a manager like Nathan Jones away and expect everything to be exactly the same. It's not going to work. So there's going to have to be contingency plans for that, really.
So in terms of style of play, I suppose, we don't know, do we? We don't know if it's going to be similar. But I suppose at the same time, if your team's used to a way of playing, I think you'll probably stick with it to it. Not exact, no matter who's in charge. The person who's in charge and caretaker on Saturday most likely is probably going to have some of their own ideas. But I think the likeliness is they'll probably stick with the plan that I'm assuming Nathan Jones had as of a couple of days ago.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's a big game on Saturday for both of us, really. If we come away with a draw, I'll be happy. I was looking at the rest of the fixtures after the news came out, and I was thinking, if we can get through this month in a good place, maybe we've got a chance because we've got a little bit of an easier run in than you and Pompey have once we get these games out of the way. But it's going to be a very difficult month, especially in these circumstances. It was going to be a difficult month anyway, but it's made it even harder. You know, the players are going to no doubt be slightly affected. There'll be a few in there that get affected. So we'll just have to see what Luton side turns up and see what happens. But it's a massive, massive game.
And I'm just looking through your fixtures there, and you're not wrong. It is tough. You've got us away, which is a tough game for both of us. You've got Peterborough at home. Peterborough were there or thereabouts at the start of the season and still kicking about. Southend away is a tough game. Southend's just outside the playoffs. You've got Portsmouth at home, which is obviously top of the table clash as well. And then going into February even, you've got Shrewsbury winning. Shrewsbury are doing relatively well as well after the change in manager. And I was actually quite impressed with them. They got a draw at Stadium Light a few weeks ago. So it is going to be a defining month for you, isn't it? And Saturday could be absolutely huge in which way it goes.
Yeah, big time. I mean, by Luton's directors, they've self-advertised this as the biggest month in our lifetime, really, because of the planning permission, potentially getting through this month and in good results, then, you know, we could potentially go up. So, yeah, very, very big month for us. And, you know, hopefully it goes the way we want it to. I mean, yesterday, apart from the Nathan Jones, we had some good news with the council. They recommended it for approval for our new stadium. So that's a piece of good news. We've been waiting on for about 50 years. So that's bordering good news. But we'll have to see next Wednesday. That's when the council meeting is, to see if that gets approved. That'll give us a little bit of momentum and some good news. But yeah.
It's funny you should mention that with the ground and stuff. I've never been to Luton. I'm relatively well travelled. I think I'm at 60 just under grounds in the UK. So I'm a little bit off the 92. But I've never been to Luton, never been to Kenilworth Road, but I believe you've got to go through somebody's sitting room to get to the away ground, the away end, sorry, is that right?
You have, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
It's an old school stadium. I mean, I was speaking to my father and my brother actually when we were down at the Barnsley game, and my lad was mascot actually, and we were sitting in the director's box, and the way you get in and to the stadium from the inside director's box is just an actual alcohol blitz. It's such a fantastic stadium. My dad moans about it and he said it's old and crooked, it's an embarrassment. But for me, it's one of the best grounds I've ever been to. Roker Park's probably one of the other best ones for atmosphere anyway.
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, I'm 32, so my time at Roker Park was 93 to 97. So it wasn't that long. But I mean, I got into double figures at Roker Park. And yeah, moving into the new stadium, look, it was like another thing entirely, being in the Stadium Light. And my best memories of being a Sunderland fan of being at the Stadium Light because of the longevity of how long we've been there and my life and when I was born. But Roker Park, there was just something that was quite nice about that. And I really enjoyed going to Accrington the other week just because it was just nostalgic to have terraces.
Yeah, that's another similar one. That's a nice little atmosphere. We've always had a good atmosphere with the Accrington fans when we've gone, because we've played them quite a lot in the FA Cup and League Two last year. But Roker Park was something else. Luton have always travelled quite well to some, because they obviously like a night out afterwards. and I just remember, I must have been about 10 or something when I was at Roker Park, and I think it was 0-0, and Dwight Marshall, one of our players, broke his leg down in the corner, but the atmosphere was just electric. Absolutely electric. And the Sunderland fans were fantastic in the pub before. They were inviting us in and speaking to us and stuff. It was great. I've always got fond memories of Sunderland, both of your grounds, but Roker Park was special. I've always remembered it.
Actually, this brings me on to something that I wanted to ask, because I was going to Google it, which probably would have been the best idea in the modern world, but nonetheless, best to ask the expert. But growing up, I always remember, you know, Luton, kind of in the 93, 94 sort of period, were like kind of bobbing around the bottom half of what was then Division One. And I always remember as a kid, when you're picking up which team wears which colours, who plays for who, who's the best three players from each team. I used to love doing that sort of stuff when I was like 7, 8 years old. Yeah. And I always remember Luton were white with blue sleeves or white with blue shorts. So there'd be a variation of like a royal blue. And then I seen you on the opening day, your opening home game this season against us, and you were wearing orange. What happened there?
Well, we had a vote back when we were in the conference as to what was going to be our home colour and what was going to be our away. And much to the fans' dismay, the vote went in the way of orange for home shirts and white away. We've always kind of really been black and white up through to the 60s. In the 70s, we introduced orange. We had orange in there as well. 80s, again, we were then black and white. We had black and white in the 90s and a bit of blue in there. And then we just decided to then have our orange as our home colours. I think it was a kind of Yankees type thing, is, you know, they look at the pinstripes type thing and take their eyes off everything else and, you know, the look of us and looking something special. But preferably I'd be black and white personally. That's from when I was a kid. So
it's disorientating, because it's like when you see an outfield player wearing number 13 or a striker wearing number 5. Luton to me were always like a variation of white. So what prompted that then? Because, I mean, if someone said to the Sunderland fans, right, I mean, we talked about changing the badge and it was just a rumour not that long ago, and everyone said, no, just leave it. Just leave it as it is. If someone said, maybe we should, I mean, this season, all the photos of the team had red shorts. And I remember, I mean, for the FIFA fans among us, you'll notice that we are wearing the red shorts on the game, but everyone thought, why are we wearing red shorts? We don't wear red shorts, we're black shorts. And we did go ahead and wear black shorts eventually. But I can't imagine a team ever getting to that point where you decide to start just totally changing your kit. Was it just like dawn of a new era sort of thing? Was that what it was about?
It was an odd one. I mean, we've always had orange, like I said, in the 70s as like an away colour. And I think they just continued that. When the consortium took over, they... Obviously, any consortium is going to have a few ideas and this, that and the other. But the kits was one of them. And we'd just taken on sponsorship with EasyJet at the time. I don't know if you remember when we took them on. But we had them on the front of the shirts, and that possibly had something to do with it. I don't know if it did or not. I don't know. But incidentally, on that point, when you said about changing the badge and the colours and stuff, Luton actually gave the rights to our name and our badge and our kits to the Supporters Trust. So I think it was on the eve of Hull City wanting to change the name, I think. And Luton Consortium said, well, we don't want to ever get into that situation no matter what it is, so we'll sign all the rights over to the Luton Supporters Trust. And that was, another fantastic idea, because it shows that, you know, our whole identity is always going to remain the same. But
yeah, as it should, and I think that's a great idea. I very much agree with it. So moving on to the game on Saturday, I suppose it's a double-sided question, quite literally. But how did you see Saturday going before today, and how do you see Saturday going now that you've lost your manager?
I think both answers would have been a draw. I think it's a hard game for us. You've got a pretty decent record at home. You're a strong team, really strong team. So I think I would have come away happy with a draw. I've watched a few of your games, and you know, you play some good football. I think it's always going to be hard. I think Barnsley's probably the best team I've seen this year, footballing wise. And I'd say you're probably second to that. And you know, I just think, if coming away from the Saturday night with a draw in the position that we're in now, is probably the best result for everybody. Really, I think I don't think we're going to come away with a win, especially not now. But I'll be hoping for a draw, really.
I'm confident of beating any team in this league, and as we should be. As you said, we have got a good team, we've got good individuals, and we play quite nice football in spades, but sometimes we don't seem to play well for 90 minutes frustratingly. The big thing for me is how quickly the away team starts. There's a few times this season the other teams have started quite well and they've just sort of frustrated us a little bit, but part of me doesn't expect Luton to do that. I think you'll not be as defensive-minded as some of those teams that want to frustrate us. I think you will have an element of wanting to come to Sunderland and wanting to win without going totally gung-ho. But are you notorious for starting quite fast?
No. Our normal tactics really are is the first half we're containing the ball and keeping the ball a bit, and then the second half going for it. That's where we've earned most of our points away from home and scored most of our goals. So second half is really where we start to get into a different gear. Luton kind of have this, and it's no disrespect to any other teams, but they have a knack of kind of going through the gears when they need to, if they need to.
Yeah.
Especially with the Christmas period, it's been a thing. It's been so stacked out to just get into the gears as and when they need to. Like we've shown at Walsall, you know, we went 2-0 down because we just really weren't at it, and then we stepped up a few gears and then we came away with a point, a very good point. So I think that's what it will be, trying to keep the ball for the first half, passing around, having a few chances, and then go for it in the second.
And which players should we... I mean, I've started doing a feature on the site of three players to look out for. Now, that are the three key players. Now, I picked three, which you may or may not disagree with, so I'll give you my three that I picked out, and then you can give me your three. Now, I went for James Collins.
Yeah, decent player. Yep. I mean, he's so hardworking, you know.
He's
all over the top of the pitch. He won't let you... defenders rest. He scores a fair few goals, but yeah, good player.
And I've also went for Andrew Shinney.
Yeah, I want to put him in the top three, but yeah, good player. He's what you'd call a baller, I guess. He's good on the ball, can score from outside the box, does really, really well.
I noticed that he's your top assist maker this season. That I based it on my experience of Andrew Shinney living in Scotland. I've seen him a fair few times, and also with him being your top assist maker. So who would you say is more likely to be the playmaker that we should worry about, if not Andrew Shinney?
It depends if they turn up. But three would be James Justin, Elliot Lee. I don't think Thorne's going to get a game. He'll be on the bench, I'd imagine. Elliot Lee and probably Shinney, to be honest. Yeah, he's where the creativity's at when we need it.
And you mentioned another one that I went for there. I went for a surprising one in George Thorne, but I think he's a great player. I think he's been really, really unlucky with injuries over at Derby, because I think he could have matured quite nicely into a potentially lower-end Premiership midfielder. And I think it's a massive coup, and I think it's probably based on the fact that he has had those injuries, but he's probably likely to go with Cormack, isn't he, on Saturday?
Yeah, I would say so. They're not going to throw him straight into it. It'd be silly to do that. It'd be silly to do that, really. But he looks a really good player, and he's got a lot of good wishes from Derby. Derby fans love him. A few of them are sad to see him go. But apparently there was something in his contract. If he played another game, then they had to pay $3 million to West Brom.
Yeah.
If he played another game for them. So I don't know if that was something to do with it or not, but we'll just see. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with him, Ari, the Nathan Jones going now. Whether Derby recall him or not. So Jones was a big part of him coming to Luton. So it's a difficult one.
Because I don't think he could because of rulings. I don't know if he actually has to play, but I suppose potentially if he went for Nathan Jones, there's no reason why he couldn't necessarily go to Stoke. I mean, I know they've got Joe Allen, but I think George Thorne fully fit is a Championship player at the very least, isn't he?
I think so. He's done really, really well in the under-23s for Derby this year. He's scored a couple of goals as well. He's done really well. He's
saying come back to fit, I would imagine.
Yeah, he's saying he's as fit as he's ever been. So, but the physicality of League One compared to under-23s in the Championship is a different ball game. So we'll just go after a look and see on that one. But potentially a fantastic player. Fantastic player.
And so just to flip it around as well, one thing I always find quite interesting, because as a Sunderland fan, you have your opinions on certain players, and they have to do a lot for that opinion to budge. Like, it's just the way I think football fans are about their own team. So I always find it quite interesting if I said you pick three Sunderland players that may have impressed you when you've watched us, or three players that you worry about. Got a feeling one of them, I think I know who one of them would be, but who would be your people that you're worried about on Saturday?
Well, when I've seen you play, I think the, obviously, Madge's one.
Yeah.
What's the situation with him at the moment? Is he going? Is he staying?
It's all gone a bit quiet, if I'm honest, in the kind of furore of that kind of like monstrosity of a game against Newcastle, but or Newcastle under 21s, and the game on Saturday. He was given an ultimatum last week, which ended on Friday. Apparently, he said he wanted to sign on Thursday, which was part of the podcast that Stuart Donald did with us on the main show. His agent then advised him not to sign a contract. I don't know, but he'll be playing on Saturday. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't play, because his form hasn't been affected at any point. He hasn't looked disinterested, or he hasn't shirked out of challenges. He's been normal Josh Maguire, truth be told.
I think he's going to turn out to be a very, very good player if you can keep him. If not, I hope you get the right price for him and sell ons as well, because I think he'll turn out to be a very good player. He looks so calm and collected in front of goal. He's a different class to a lot of the strikers in this league.
Yeah, he's really come on. I mean, he's just turned 20, and his touch is just, for a kid that's just turned 20, is just ridiculous. He's got things to learn. Of course he has. But for him to be doing as well as he's doing at his age and the amount of goals he's scoring, I mean, I don't think he's ready for the Premiership yet. I don't know if he's ready for the Championship at high end yet. I'd encourage him, if he is listening, which I'm doubting that he is, to stay, sign the contract and continue your progression, because if we get promoted, there's not many teams in that Championship that are going to have 30,000 to 35,000, sometimes 46,000 fans there just about every other week. I don't think realistically he could go to a club. I mean, yeah, maybe Cardiff, Huddersfield or something like that, but is he going to play as much? I think he's making the wrong decision if he decides not to sign the contract, but I suppose I'm not Josh Maguire, so.
There's not many teams in the Championship I think that he suits, really. I don't think he suits Cardiff at all. Not their style of play. I just don't think he fits in. The other player was McGeady. He's on the ball. He's a different class for this league. I think he's absolutely a fantastic player. He just cruises past players. I forget the game I was watching the other day with Min, but he was just walking past players. and you know, he's calm on the ball, really, really good. I don't know if that's every single game, but he looked a different class.
He's had a really good season. I mean, I think each year, but a lot of them were scored in defeats under Simon Grayson, when we were shit the entire season, as I'm sure you've probably seen on Netflix. But when it comes to McGeady this season, he was injured for the first 6 to 8 weeks, but he came on as sub, got a goal against Southend, and he's just never looked back. I think he's on 5 goals already this season. And like you say, there's points when he just walks past people. But the good thing is he looks interested this season. He tracks back, he gets stuck in. He's been captain a few times. For me, if Josh Maguire wasn't getting all the headlines, he'd be far and wide our best player. And I think he's going to be there or thereabouts for player of the season if he continues at the level he's playing at. He's fantastic at this level. And he's obviously got the experience to not be overrode by the physicality of this league as well. He knows how to wriggle around that sort of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. He doesn't seem to be struggling with the physicality. Did you think you were going to struggle with the physicality of League One coming down?
We've got a team of midgets. We still do at points, if I'm completely honest with you. We've just signed a centre-half from Burnley who's 6'2". He's been on loan at Hearts, so I've seen him once or twice living in Glasgow. Not often, but once or twice. And he's pretty strong. He's pretty solid. I was speaking to one of our former players who's at Burnley, which is Phil Bardsley, and he said he's a good lad. So hopefully he aids that. We've struggled physicality defensively. Like Baldwin and Flanagan are both obviously very talented players, but sometimes get a little bit overawed. But people like McGeady and Lyndon Gooch, the kind of smaller players in midfield, and maybe Josh Maguire, he's a little bit lightweight, I suppose, but he's still only a kid, realistically, have handled it quite well. It's the physicality more through the middle of the park where we're struggling, but hopefully that'll be rectified. I know there's 4 or 5 players we're in for, and I'm hoping one of them's a big bastard in midfield, if I'm honest with you. So, but he's done very well, McGeady.
And then the last one is Lyndon Gooch. Obviously, he's just signed a new deal for you as well, and he looks like a good player. I'd say they were your main three. Really good players.
He's out of form at the moment, Lyndon. If I'm honest with you, I would personally probably. I said this before last night's game. I said I would have probably played Chris Maguire and give Lyndon a few games rest, because he's been a little bit off colour. But then Maguire scored a really good goal last night. But if I'm honest, I thought he was rubbish. I thought nothing really came off him. And I'm sure people disagree with me, but Maguire's been off colour a little bit as well. So I think Gucci will probably play, and hopefully prove me completely wrong and I have a good game. So Gooch, McGeady, Maja, yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you on that. I think they've been our best three players overall this season. But what's your thoughts on the match on Saturday? What's your prediction?
I think I'm going to go for 2-2. 2-2, yeah. I think you're going to come out at us in the first half, and I think we're going to, we might struggle with it, but I think we've got enough about us. I'll go for 2-2. What about you?
I think we'll win. I have a feeling it'll be a randomly comfortable win. I don't know why. I've never been that confident. I mean, I've been confident all season to an extent, but it's been like 1-0s, 2-1s, but I quite fancy a 3-1. I think we'll come out the traps early, and we have had periods this season, like Barnsley at home. You mentioned Barnsley being the best side you've seen this season. I'd probably agree with that, Barnsley and Charlton. But with Barnsley, we just had a 10-minute spell where we just dominated them and scored 3 goals. And I can see that being similar. I don't know why. Yeah. Just a feeling that I've got. I hope I'm right. I very rarely am, as you can probably see by my predictions per week. But so you've probably got nothing to worry about in me being Mystic Meg, to be honest. But I'm going to go 3-1 Sunderland, actually.
Oh, we'll go with that. The thing you said about Barnsley and their spells is when we had them on New Year's Day, they were frighteningly good for pockets, but they were so hot and cold. If they could just do that for 90 minutes, they'd run away with this league, I think.
Yeah, so do I. I think they were a really good team. We went 3-0 up, I think, in half an hour. We had this random 10-minute spell, and then they got one back just before half-time, got one back just after half-time, and then really pressured us for like 20 minutes, and we got a goal and like the 83rd, Luke O'Neill scored like the 83rd or something like that coming off the bench, and we won 4-2, but it was far from a 4-2 game. They were definitely the best side we've seen, and if Maja was to go in an ideal, realistic world, I think Kiefer Moore would probably be the person that I would want in the side. I think he's terrific.
Yeah, good player. He's strong as well.
Very, very good player.
Yeah, very good player, yeah.
So, are you going on Saturday?
I am, yeah. Well, I'm going to my little lad. I did get him a ticket, but he's so upset he's not going anymore. So that's that. So I'm going. Yeah, I'll be going with my family. So we'll be enjoying a few beers in the pub beforehand, I'd imagine.
Good. Well, enjoy it, mate. But don't enjoy it too much. Have a horrible Saturday in terms of the 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock. Aside from that, enjoy the city. I'm sure you have. You spoke highly of us before, so I'm sure you know where to go. But thanks for coming on, mate.
Cheers,
really, really appreciate it. And have a good rest of the week up until Saturday, like I say.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, mate. Cheers. Take care.
Cheers, Ian. Take care, mate. Bye-bye. Bye. So he was a nice lad. I liked him. Carlos said it was last time we played Luton was nice. I love Carlos. Nice wee lad. Ian Robertson was his name, his full name. And you can follow them at We Are Luton Town. They're on Twitter. When he said Ian Robertson, I immediately thought of Ian Rogerson. The fact that he remembers Roker Park and stuff like that, maybe I should have mentioned it. But did anyone actually see Ian Rogerson ever play for Sunderland? Or am I going too far back for some of you younger kids? For the record, he was a mid-90s player. We signed from Birmingham and he was shite. But yeah, Saturday, I'm pretty confident. I don't know why, I just feel a bit more confident than usual. The stars are aligning with Nathan Jones getting the sack and so on and so forth. So hopefully I'm proven right and hopefully I actually win a bet for once. I've been recording or have recorded podcasts with Chris Macon and also Nicky Summerby over the week, players that we've interviewed before but never for a podcast, and they're both absolutely sound lads and a real good laugh. So I think you really, really enjoy that. I'll try my best not to say mate all the time because I know some of you dislike that, but it's just the way I speak, mate. It's just the way it's going to have to be. But thanks as always, on a serious note, for the feedback and the constructive criticism that you always give all of us a Rugger Report. At the end of the day, we do it just for you. That's the only reason we do it, and we enjoy doing it. Keep it coming. Keep listening, and thanks if you've listened in again. Enjoy the match on Saturday. Hopefully it's 3 points and we get to talk about being in the automatic places sort of this time in a couple of weeks, and we can start looking forward to actually going towards a title rather than just getting in the top two. My name's been Graham, and this has been the Rugger Report Extra Podcast against Luton Town. Thanks very much. Bye bye.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission.
At BetDAG, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDAG is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDAG, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.